You guys, this gives me such a great honor to introduce this guy. I got to see him come into recovery, and he's just an inspiration to me. And every time I ask him for help, he always says yes. And I have a commitment where I need to bring other guys in, and he's been doing that with me all these months. And I'm so grateful to him to never say no unless he had a previous agreement. And just the coolest kid in the whole wide world. I love him, Patrick. Come on in. Patrick. Yeah, buddy.
Patrick Alcoholic. Patrick. Hey guys. My sobriety date is December 25th, 2022, Christmas. It's easy to remember. My home group is the Men's Stag in Orchid every Thursday at 6:30. Nate D is my sponsor, and Kevin G is my grand sponsor. And this was the very first meeting I came to. The Sunday night speaker meeting. It's rather surreal to be up here being the speaker. It's really awesome. Really excited. Marcus was actually the very first person. I'll get into this a little more, but Marcus was the first person when I was kind of awkwardly in that doorway over there in my fight or flight was kicking in. And I was like, not sure if I was gonna bolt or if I was gonna sit down and take a seat. And Marcus was like, come here, come here. How's it going? And he introduced himself. It was so great. So anyways, I'm 9 months and 13 days sober today. Thank you. Growing up, I wasn't really around really heavy drinking or anything like that. It was kind of funny, like the older I got, I started to notice what like wine bottles were, but I didn't know what alcohol was. And my parents would always wait till we went to bed to open anything up or drink. They would never drink in front of us when we were little. So I was never ever really around a lot of heavy drinking or anything growing up. My dad's side of the family, there is a little bit of addiction struggle on his side. My grandparents got divorced before I was born, and my grandpa was always a pretty heavy drinker on my dad's side. And my step-grandma, the one that he married, passed away when I was really young from cirrhosis. So she died of alcoholism, and she was kind of given the ultimatum of you can either stop drinking and you may live a while, or you can keep drinking and you're gonna die. And she just chose to keep drinking. So lo and behold, she's no longer with us. And so that's kind of the only stuff I was really around growing up. A great childhood. I mean, my parents were always around. Every sporting event growing up, my dad coached t-ball, coached soccer, coached anything he could be a part of. He was always there. My mom was always at every single game or any event that they could possibly be at. I'm still her parents, 100%. But when I was younger, I want to say I was about 5, maybe 6 years old, and I remember we were going on a trip out to Florida. My dad had a conference, and so we decided to make like a little mini vacation out of it, and for some reason, it was shortly before we left, I was overcome with what I now know is anxiety, and I don't know what kind of 5-year-old gets anxiety, but I was like ridden with anxiety horribly. I wouldn't eat. I was losing weight really quickly. And if I could somehow get food in me, I would throw it up just because I would be so worked up. My stomach was always in knots. And my parents didn't really know what to do. And I mean, rightfully so. Like, I mean, I think for a while they were kind of in the... I think they thought maybe I was faking it, or maybe looking for attention. I mean, that is an obvious assumption for a child that young. But it kind of progressed as a lot of diseases do, like alcoholism. And it was getting worse and worse, and I wasn't eating. They couldn't figure it out. And I remember one day my mom was like, if you don't eat, I'm not going to eat. And so I was like, well, crap. Like, you got to eat. And so they got me to start eating somehow. But that was always a really big struggle for me. And it was always there. It was always kind of luring or kind of lurking around. And I'm trying to like catalog my events of anxiety, but it wasn't until, I'll speed ahead a tiny bit, it wasn't until about 16, I was about 16, I got my driver's license, and it kind of instilled a little bit of control that I was able to kind of get when I turned that age, where I could be in places I wanted to be, I can come and go as I pleased. So that was all really great, but kind of going back over into childhood, it also really helped. My grandparents ended up moving across the street from me on my mom's side when I was about 8 years old. So, I mean, it was like every little kid's dream. That was my age. If I didn't like what was going on in my parents' house, if I didn't like what I was having for dinner at my parents' house, I literally just walk across the street. I mean, it was across the street. So, I mean, how better can it be? It really couldn't be. And I was really, really close with my grandparents. I mean, I would go over there after school. My grandma would have a snack waiting for me. And I remember my anxiety getting a little bit better around that age. And I probably had a little bit of a break between like having a daily meltdown and losing weight, throwing up all the time. Until I got into high school, I would say. I got into high school and it was a new school in a different town. I had to drive like 17 miles to get to high school. I lived out in the middle of nowhere in Hanford, if anyone knows where that is. So I went to Kingsburg High, and it was kind of the whole same thing. It was a new environment, and it just kind of took that crash again. And I was really anxious all the time, just really just losing it. And then kind of gained a sense of control, like I was saying, when I turned 16. Up until senior year of high school. Senior year, everything was going really great. And I vividly remember I went to lunch. I would usually always go to lunch by myself, always. And I went to lunch by myself. I would usually always be out with my friends for lunch. And I felt it, and it was just like setting in again. And I remember I woke up the next morning and I told my mom, I was like, I can't go to school. Like, we're shutting down. Closed for business right now. And it just like the whole cycle started over again. And my poor mom, I remember the look on her face. She's just like, oh crap. Like, because it was really hard on them, like not knowing what to do when I would get like that. Because I wouldn't know what to do really, and I wasn't really even drinking at that point. I had never been drunk up until that point, and so my mom finally took me to a doctor where we would kind of try and seek out every alternative to like getting me some sort of prescription. I went to therapy. I went to counselors. I did this crazy EMDR thing where you close your eyes and you hold things that vibrate in your hands, and it just made no sense to me. Absolutely no sense. I would just like stare at the lady and she's like, and I was just like, I don't know. You're getting paid a lot of money for this too. And yeah, that was all just kind of, it's just kind of funny to look back on that now. All the stuff I tried, and then I just couldn't face trying to go to another therapist and figure all that out. And I just remember telling my mom, I need to go to a doctor. I need something. I know they have stuff for this. And so we went to the doctor. I'm like losing my mind. Can't even like sit still in the doctor's office. I remember I had to go like wait out in the like the entrance. My mom's like sitting in there. Like they called me and my she's like, yeah, he's over there. He's the anxious one. And so they came and got me and I'm sitting in there and telling him what's going on. And they're like, yeah, you have generalized anxiety and you're having a panic attack like right now. And I was like, yep, that's happening. And so they wrote me a prescription for Xanax. And that was, I remember the first day I had it, I had a bottle of it with like unlimited refills. Who does that? Looking back on that. But I didn't even take it. I remember just the fact of knowing that I had it really made me, just knowing I had a backup plan if something were to go wrong or if I'm out somewhere. And that really gave me kind of a sense of comfort just to know that I had that in my arsenal as a backup. If worse comes to worse, I can just take one. And I never really abused it. I remember like taking them at school a couple of times and some of my classmates were like, you're quiet. I'm just like, yeah, I'm really calm. usually I was like a really talkative guy and I couldn't just sit next to people in class and not talk to them. And I don't know, I made friends with the people I usually sit next to because you have all semester to sit next to someone. I'm like, what are you going to do? Just, I don't know. That's just how I was. And anyways, so senior year comes around and I graduate and then I start kind of experimenting with partying. And it's just kind of the classic getting drunk for the first time and just feeling that just ease, this sense of ease and comfort that came over me when I got drunk for the first time. I was like, what have I been waiting for? This is crazy. My problems are solved. And that just really excited me. And I remember wanting to do it more and more. And I was just kind of like, when's the next party? This is going to be great. And I remember it made me sleep really well too, because I've always had a really hard time sleeping. And I started sneaking in my parents' house. Like I'd go home to visit and I'd sneak a couple shots and like go to bed and just be like a baby. And my mom would wake me up in the morning and it'd be like noon and I'd be like, oh. 'Cause it's just free liquor in my parents' house. I don't know. I guess it comes sooner to some people, but it came to me when I was like 18 or 19 years old and doing stuff like that, sneaking shots at my parents' house. I also had no tolerance back then either, so a few shots would get me a long ways. And then I got into college, and I remember I started my first semester at Fresno State, and I didn't want to go. My parents really wanted me to go to school. My whole family wanted me to go to school. I mean, that's all my friends went to school, and that's just kind of like the group of people that I would hang out with, and my family, that's just what you do. You graduate from high school, and you go to college, and get your degree, and you go live your life. And I don't think I had any business being in college at that point in my life when I was 18. A lot of younger people really have a lot of aspirations. Not that I didn't have any aspirations, but I know a select few of my friends have known since they were like little, like this is what I'm gonna do. And that's exactly what they did. Their life trajectory was just like spot on, like boom, 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 boom. They did it. Like that's what they wanted to do and that's fantastic. But that's not what happened for me. As much as I might want it to, but I mean, that's life. I mean, so I started getting going at Fresno State and quickly found my way to the college fraternity scene over there. And I kind of beelined to fraternity parties and doing all the college things and growing definitely further from my family and Things were great for a little bit, though. I still didn't know what I wanted to do. I was changing majors, like, every year. I was in my fifth year at Fresno State and, like, my fifth year of college, my fifth major. And I still had no idea what I wanted to do. And things started to take a little bit of a turn. I was kind of unhappy on multiple levels. That was one of the things that was really bothering me. But there was a few things that were really on my mind every single day. But I remember when I turned 21, I had alcohol readily available to me at any moment. I could go to a liquor store and buy myself a handle, get trashed by myself. I started getting trashed by myself at like 21, 22 years old. And I remember I started hearing some comments. My friend Ann turned around once, like right when I got to class, because I came in from the back and she was sitting right there. And she didn't know I was behind her, and I sat down, and I remember she was like, "See who it was?" And she was like, "You smell like vodka." And I was like, "Oh, like that's that's too bad." And so I just like subtle things like here and there, like looking back, I'm like, "Yeah, that's crazy that I was like walking around like that." And so stuff like that. It started off kind of funny, though. I remember I was in a math lecture, and I sat down. I don't even think I slept that night. I was out at all hours of the night on, like, a Tuesday at, like, some sort of party. And I remember I had a 7:30 or so lecture, and I sat next to my friend Tamar. This is still when it was fun. And I sat next to her, and she's like, "You smell like vodka and partying." She's like, "I'm jealous." And so that was funny, but then the comments started to get much more concerning as the next couple of years went on, and sort of lots of red flags being raised. And then I started to skip class, and I remember one night, I must have been 22, maybe 23, one night I don't remember much of it, but I remember I woke up and I remembered I had bought a handle of vodka that night, and it was fresh. It was like brand new. And I woke up maybe at like midnight after I'd been drinking it, and there was like that much left in like a full handle, and I drank the whole thing, which is crazy to think about, especially like 22 years old. And I was just really, really putting it away, like alarmingly. And I couldn't take it anymore. I left Fresno State. I called my parents, and I was like, "I don't know what I want to do. I don't think I should be in school anymore." Dropped out of the fraternity, dropped out of all the organizations I was involved with at Fresno State, and just kind of packed up and moved back to my parents' house. And things were really... I'm trying to think of the right word. Things were not good. I mean, my mom, I remember my mom coming out, and it was like 11 or 12 at night, and she'd like pull over the pocket door and like come out and check on me and be like, "What's he doing? How many has he had?" Like, kind of a thing. And she's just like, "I wish you wouldn't do that." And I wish I wouldn't have done that to them too. But that's all part of living amends now. But they were really concerned. And it only got worse from there. I mean, they had a lot of alcohol in their house, and they didn't know how much I was drinking. I was stealing like a bottle of wine, like you name it, or I would go to the liquor store and like have my own stash somewhere in my room. And they had no idea, but they saw the effects of like a broken toilet seat or something, like for me falling in the middle of the night and like totally landing on the toilet, breaking the toilet seat, not remembering. And then my dad waking me up the next day and being like, "Why the hell is the toilet seat broken? What, like, what happened?" And I'm like, "I don't know." And a few other times, like, I fell asleep on the counter in their kitchen. I don't know why I was all the way up on their counter. And it was just like adding up to just like, just like doing some really weird, like unexplainable things, as a lot of us have been through, I'm sure. But things got really bad, and it was to the point where my parents didn't quite know what to do, and I was reaching my breaking point, I remember, and I broke down one night. I didn't even know what date it was. It was like 3 days had like gone by, and my poor parents, like, I don't even know what I did or said for like 3 days. I think it was like 2 or 3 days, and I kind of came to and was like, I think we need to do something. Like, this is out of control. Like, things could be better. And so the next day I was in a rehab called Hope by the Sea, and got in there, totally regretted my decision of doing that when I woke up the next day too. I'm just like the classic, like, what have I done? And they're like loading me up in the car. They'd already packed my suitcase while I was still sleeping. And so they hauled me down to Hope by the Sea, and I got there, and it was really scary. I mean, I remember they were giving me a lot of like pills and telling me to like take this handful of stuff, and I was like, I can't take that, I'm gonna throw it up. And she's like, yeah, you're gonna take it. And I'll be like, okay. And I would like throw it up. I'm like, I can't swallow anything right now. Like, I'm really ill. Like, I was like detoxing and coming down from all the booze and everything, and I just couldn't hold anything down. And then I don't know what other people's experiences at rehab were like, that have been, but I just remember, like, I lost that sense of control. I couldn't control where I was. I had to go to all these crazy things with all these other people and listen to them talk, and I'm like, you guys are way worse. Like, I'm not bad. Meanwhile, yeah, I'm horribly like unwell. But I had convinced myself that I didn't belong there, and I talked to my house. I forgot the woman who kind of keeps an eye on you, and I was just like, I think I want to leave. And she was like, you shouldn't do that. And I was like, I'm gonna leave. And she was just like, don't leave. And anyway, so I was like, it had been 6 days, I think, and I was just like, I gotta go. So I rented a car, walked into a freaking Enterprise with a suitcase that got dropped off by a taxi cab. This is before Uber, and they were just like, where are you going? And I was like, to Hanford. And they were like, where'd you come? Are you traveling? And I was like, I'm traveling to Hanford. And they were like, okay, we're gonna have to put an extra hold on this car for you. And I don't know, I think they charged me some ungodly amount. And they were just like, you're sketchy. We're gonna charge you. We're gonna charge you a lot of money. Don't blame them. Anyways, I get back to Hanford. My parents are livid. They didn't know. That is one of the few times I've ever heard my mom say the F word. And I came back into their house to get some of my stuff that was over there, because I had a really crappy little apartment across town. And I just remember my mom saying, like, not everyone has the luxury of being as fucked up as you. And I was just like, yeah, like, burn. That's burn. And I just remember that just seething into my soul. And I was like, she's right. So anyways, I had to get out of there. I made the decision very quickly to get out of the Central Valley. It wasn't doing anything for me. Wasn't conducive to the life I really wanted to live. And there's just really not a lot going on in like small rural Central Valley. And so I ship off to, actually, kind of how I ended up there. I had a friend home from the Maritime Academy in Vallejo, and he was like, man, my roommate like just left me and I can't find anyone to rent my other room. And I was just like, I'll go. And so I didn't know where Vallejo was, and I Googled it and figured it was like up in the Bay Area. So I was like, this'll do. And Vallejo is kind of scary, actually, for anyone who's been there. It's an interesting town. I loved my 4-month tenure over there. Learned a lot of things. But I moved up there. I was sober. I was not drinking. I was very determined to kind of catch this little like break that I had from drinking. And if anything really good came out of being in rehab for that 6-day period, it gave me 6 days of a head start to stop drinking. And I did have motivation to quit drinking at that point. I didn't want to be sick anymore. I was really sick. I was drinking a horrendous amount of booze every day. I was sick. And so I moved up there, and I remember I started working in Tiburon at this place called Sam's Cafe. I started waiting tables over there. I started waiting tables over there at Sam's Cafe, and it was really fun. And that's where I realized you can actually make a decent living waiting tables. And so I quickly saved up some money and put a deposit down on my own apartment over in Novato near San Rafael in Marin County, and left my roommate. Unfortunately, I had to find another roommate. And so I started my own little life up there, and I started to make great friends. I was waiting tables for about 2 years, and I was sitting in a Vons parking lot, and all of a sudden I was just like, I need to finish school. And so I ended up finding a university really close to where I lived, and lo and behold, they had like a degree completion program, which I could do work during the day and go to school at night. So a year and a half later, I finished and got my bachelor's degree, and a lot of good stuff was happening when I sobered up. And part of the reason why I moved up there, and something that contributed to a lot of the way I was feeling and just a lot of the stuff that I was going through was I didn't feel like I could live in the Central Valley and be a gay man over there. And so that's why I moved up to the Bay Area and kind of came out and spread my wings up there and kind of developed into, I just made my own life up there and made a lot of friends. And things were really good for a solid 2.5 years. And I remember my best friend up there, he would call me, he got me a job. I left the restaurant industry and got started in the automotive industry, and my best friend got me a job at BMW. And the auto industry is pretty cutthroat, if any of you are familiar with that. And it's just a really stressful industry. And so I worked with him, and I decided it's not good to have your best friend be your boss. So we parted ways, and I went over and I started working for Porsche in Mill Valley, which was, it was so much fun. I was a kid in a candy shop. It was my favorite brand. But we were both in the service department, and to this day, he's still my best friend. And I'd see him on the freeway sometimes on our way home, and I'd call him, and he'd be like, what? And I'd be like, I know, what? He's like, bad day? And I'm like, yep. He's like, you want to come over and have some wine? I'm like, hell yeah, I do. And we would just sit there and drink some wine and talk about all the horrible things our customers would do to us all week. And it was a lot of fun. These were the fun times when I thought I was in control of my drinking still, which was very short-lived. We had the fires up there. I don't know if any of you guys remember the fires up in the Bay Area. And that was quite the time. You think COVID, I mean, it was like three things in a row when I was up there. It was the fires. We lost power in Marin County for over a week. No cell towers. The cell towers were down after the first day. It was like apocalyptic, I'm telling you. It really was. It was so quiet. I had to leave. but I was trapped alone one night with my thoughts, and I was like, this is one night too many. So I knocked on my neighbor's door who had a Tesla, and I was like, hey, I'm leaving. I'm like, do you need to go to the store? Do you like need anything? Because you're not going to go anywhere. Like, for who knows how long. And he didn't take me up on my offer, but anyways, that was, I'm getting a little sidetracked. That was one of the things. And my best friend ended up losing his house up there, and he ended up moving. Then we had COVID, and I had really a tight-knit group of friends up there. And my friend group just kind of disbanded within like a year, I would say. And so that really took a toll on me. And I didn't have my people anymore. And then COVID hit, and it was just like, man, what else is going to happen? Like, when's the Bay Area going to get a break up here? And so I was in a really, really bad relationship then too. And I was kind of lonely. And that person worked in restaurants, and they bring over wine all the time. God, gobs and gobs of wine. And I had never told any of these people, like, I, in the past, had an alcohol problem. I don't anymore, but in the past I did. And I, one night came clean after I felt myself really start to slip away, and I could feel like it felt the same. I remember that same feeling the first time that it really, really got a hold of me. And I just felt like it, I could feel like the booze just totally had its teeth sinked into me again. And it was really scary. And so anyways, that didn't last very long. And I called my parents and like told them what happened. And they were like, we're here, like, tell us what you need, blah, blah, blah. Always there for me. And so I made the decision. I mean, they always joked about, like, you should move, get back closer to us. So I made the decision really shortly after there to move here. My parents moved from Hanford to Napomo while I still lived up there. I lived up there for about almost 8 years or so. And so I moved here about a little over 2 years ago, I would say. And the whole time, I mean, as soon as I moved here, I was by myself. I didn't know anyone again. I remember the first night in this crazy place I rented in Grover. I was like, I made a mistake. Like, I made a mistake. I hear someone saying crazy things. This place, my bedroom is in the shape of a coffin. Like, there's a lot going on in here. And I just started to lose it again. And my mom called me, and she's like, you're drinking, aren't you? And I was like, uh-huh. And started repeating itself as it does, the progressive disease that alcohol is. And it got really bad again. And I remember I had to go stay at their house for, I don't know, it was like a few weeks. And I was like, remember, I stayed there and I didn't drink that first night. And my mom came in the morning and was like, get up and at him. Like, let's do this. And I like looked up at her, and she was just like, oh, like, I think she recognized that look. And so they kind of like nursed me back to health a little bit. And we really decided I needed to not live in that place anymore. It was not doing good things for me to live in that. It's hard to explain. It was a bad living situation. So anyways, I ended up moving to Santa Maria, and I got a job at Honda, and things were good. And I thought I'd kind of like moved back out of my disease, and I was cured again, and started hanging out with my coworkers and going out with them. And then I remember one of my coworkers was like, oh, no, this, I'm so sorry. I'm like, dipping into the two different jobs I've had. One of my other coworkers, after I was, it was at Honda, and I had left Honda for another job after that. And I wasn't drinking again. This was like off and on since I had moved here. And one of my other coworkers was like, why don't you come out with us? Like, come drinking. And I was like, you don't want to see that. And they were like, no, like, you're fine. And I'm like, you don't want to see that. And so they were like, come on. And I was like, okay. And they saw it and they were like, holy crap. They were like, don't come with us like anymore. And I was like, I told you. I told you, you asked for it. You shall ask and you shall receive. So they did. And yeah, they got a little taste of what I can turn into, which is not very pretty. And anyways, I totally bottomed out and did the same thing. The same cycle repeated itself. I ended up getting fired. I could show up to work, but I wasn't present. I was making mistakes, and I was a horrible worker is what I was. It's all it really comes down to. And I ended up getting fired, and I don't blame them. I would have fired me too. And anyways, so I got a DUI this past November, and that was kind of like seemingly the bottom. I went up north to a wedding and got a DUI up north, and then freaking out when I got back, and made me drink even more. And I was just like blacked out for probably like a week, honestly. And then I ended up calling a lawyer, and I got a lawyer to represent me, which I don't advise anyone getting a DUI like 5 hours from where you live. It's really horrible. But yeah, Luckily he appeared for me like the two or three times that I had to do that stuff. But I remember he called me, and well, I saw his call on my call log on my phone, and I don't remember talking to him. And so my phone rings the next day and it's him, and he was just like, what the f- is wrong with you, blah blah blah, get your ass to an AA meeting. And I was just like, what's that gonna do? And so I went on Zoom a couple times, and I was like, like, I don't know, it's Zoom. Anyway, so lo and behold, I come in that Sunday night, and Marcus is here, gets me in here, and he's like, come on, man. And he gets me in here, makes me feel at home and comfortable. And as soon as I got a couple meetings under my belt, everyone was speaking my language. They were saying exactly so many things I was thinking. I just couldn't believe it. I was like mind blown. And I didn't want to do what I was doing anymore at that point. There was a lot of willingness on my part to not do what I was doing. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have any tools. And so once I got in here and Marcus gave me my big book, and he wrote, I hope this helps you like it helped me. Love, Marcus. And that was very touching to me. And I will always remember that. And I'll hopefully always have this big book. Hopefully it never gets destroyed by a dog or anything. And it's a little joke. Anyways, so that was fantastic. And I went to a couple more meetings here, and then I don't know if anyone remembers Trevor, and Trevor brought me over to the STAG meeting, which is my home group. That was the very first STAG meeting I went to, the first meeting at the church in Orchid over there. And this guy was sitting in front of me at that meeting, and I was still super out of it, totally out of it, but sober. And I remember the meeting ended, and this person in front of me stood up and turned around, and they were holding a baby the entire time, and I had no idea that they were holding a baby. And that ended up being Nate. He turns around and introduces himself, and probably just like deer in the headlights. And I was like, I can't believe that he's holding a baby. I had no idea. The baby didn't make a sound. It was just, I was so shocked by that. I don't know why. And he came up, introduced himself. He's like, do you have a sponsor? And I was like, no. And he agreed to be my temporary sponsor that night. And then he is still my sponsor. He is my sponsor. And I attribute my, I think anyone's success in AA to good sponsorship. And if you're new here and you don't have a sponsor, make sure and get a sponsor. You might not know what they're saying or why they're saying it, but what they're saying means something. You might not know what it means when they're saying it, but it'll click into place, I promise. Speaking of promises, I'm gonna read some of the promises. It's kind of my favorite right now. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And I couldn't agree more. Something that happened fairly recently, I found out I was getting laid off for the first job I have had since I did get sober. Does anyone have the time? Okay. Since I did get sober. And I ended up getting laid off. I actually really liked working there. And they ended up shutting down. And tomorrow is my first day at a new job, actually, which is kind of... It's super cool to be able to speak here tonight and be all fired up tomorrow for my new job. But my mom found out. I told my mom when I found out it had happened. I told my parents in a text message, and I didn't see them or anything. And I was on lunch, and my mom has a Mini Cooper. And I remember I was at Chick-fil-A, and I see her little Mini Cooper like swoop by me in the parking lot, and I was like, what the heck? Because they live in Napomo. It's not that far, but I didn't expect to see my mom in the parking lot by Chick-fil-A. And so anyways, I called her, and I was like, hey, I'm right behind you. And she got out, and I won't forget the look on her face. And she was so, so worried about me, like they were for so many years. And she just looked at me, and she's like, you're okay. Like, you're okay. And I was like, I'm fine. I'm getting Chick-fil-A. And that's how I felt. And then she just had this, I mean, rightfully so, she's worried sick. And so I talked to her, and it's just a look of relief, and just knowing that I can come here, I can work the steps, I can work with my sponsor, and know that they won't have to worry about me another day in their lives. And that I can die a happy man, knowing that I won't cause them any more pain and suffering, any more damage like I've done in the past. So that is, I am truly grateful for AA and what it's given me. And I owe everything that I have now to AA. And getting through this job change and everything, she's been worried about me in the past, these past few weeks, but I'm starting tomorrow. I couldn't be more pumped, and I can't believe I got to come here and speak to everyone on a Sunday night right before I start a new job. I traditionally would be worried sick about starting a new job, and I would traditionally, you'd never catch me dead speaking to a room full of people like this. So it's really, really cool to get to come here and just really be a part of this fellowship and really start to get to know a lot of you, know a lot of you really well. So it's, I love it. I guess I'll leave it at that, you guys.
Put my hand.